right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 27, and it's been a couple of weeks because we've had a whole lot of really fun and crazy stuff go on. We had holidays and birthdays and stuff like that, but we are back with you. I am your host, Andrew.
And I'm Anitra.
And we are here because we love to play games with our kids.
We do.
And we did a fair bit of that over the last couple of weeks. We went to the Boston Festival of Indie Games.
And we have so much to talk about from
Boston. That it is going to spill into next week.
Yes.
We should say our next show.
Ooh, yes, our next show. It's going to be a two-parter.
Right. But we also, we had some friends over for Labor Day weekend, and they brought a whole big pile of games. It was basically my wish list of games that I hadn't gotten around to playing yet.
We spent a whole day basically just playing games, and it was awesome.
And, you know, when we kind of foisted our children off on watching TV and playing.
But only part of the time, because our friends who came over, although they don't have any kids themselves, like kids and like playing games with kids. Right. And so about half the time we were playing games with the kids.
That's true. There was one point, I think, actually, that I had passed out, fallen asleep, and they were playing games with our kids. And that was perfect. I was sleeping. My kids were being entertained. It was glorious.
It was also educational.
Was it? Why is that?
Because they were playing a game called 10 Days in the USA.
Okay. I was unconscious for this game. So why don't you tell me about 10 days?
I was also not playing, so I will do the best I can. The idea is that you are making a trip across the country. You have 10 days to make said trip. And so you have these different options of, like, you can travel, you can walk from one state to an adjoining state, or you can take a car, or you can take an airplane. And the idea is that you're trying to hit certain states within your time frame.
How do you figure out which states to hit? You like draw.
So I think you draw a hand of cards and I kind of floated in and out as they were playing it, but the kids really seem to enjoy it. Obviously, our oldest, who can read and has some grasp of geography, did a better job than our five-year-old, who neither can read nor has a grasp of geography.
Right.
But they had a lot of fun with it, and our friend who brought it was all weekend long. She was like, "Hey, I really want to show you guys this game. I really want to show you guys this game." So, it fun was had all around.
Right. So I was helping her out by falling asleep.
Yes, that's pretty much.
Right. I'll position it that way.
Yes.
That way I feel like not a terrible father.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. We played a lot of games that weekend. The first one, actually, I don't even remember what order, but I'll just list them off in the order that we have here. The first one we played was a game called New York 1901. This is a game that came up on Kickstarter last year, I want to say, and I was really intrigued by the art style. It really reminds me, for some reason, of a game that like a Days of Wonder would put out. It's kind
of definitely.
It's got almost that Ticket to Ride sort of older sort of stylistic
old timey feel. But like in a serious way, not like the Boomtown Bandits, which it feels old timey, but it's also kind of cartoony.
Yeah. It's definitely, the art style in Boomtown Bandits is different, but the art style in this game is similar to Ticket to Ride. And it's really not a surprise if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, we have, you know, we always recommend the 1910 expansion. And
this is New York 1901.
This is a really, really neat game where basically what you're doing is you're building buildings on different blocks in New York City.
And
at the beginning of the game, you draw a couple of random streets, which are bonus streets. So you get bonus points for every building that you have on each one of those streets.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if you have, a building on the intersection of two of those, then you get two bonus points.
Which it's nice.
Little thing. But the way it works is there's certain tiers that that unlock bigger buildings that you can then build. So once you get a certain number of points, you can build silver buildings. Then you get some more points and you can build gold buildings.
Yep.
And so everybody's really drawing cards and trying to
get
the right resources together.
You're buying plots of land.
Right.
And then you have the option whether or not to build on your plots of land.
Right.
You can only hang on to so many empty plots before you run out of
little builder guys.
Yeah, little guys who can hang on to your empty plots for you.
So you're piecing the plots together to build buildings that are not necessarily the same shapes as the plots. So you might need to get two plots next to each other in order to build a building that would span both of them.
Yeah. One of the things I found really interesting about this game is that there's more strategy involved than I would have initially thought looking at it because of that whole bonus streets concept. It's always how many buildings you have on that street. So it's not always the best idea to just build bigger and bigger and bigger buildings.
Right.
If you can, especially if you can put something on a corner or if it's two parallel streets, you might be a lot better served by building a lot of small buildings along that area than one or two big buildings, because that'll get you the bonus points, and the bonus points can win you the game.
Right. And, you know, this is a game that one of the reasons why I like this game is because I think this game translates very well to playing with smaller kids. There's really not a lot of reading. There's just the names of streets, and everything else is color and shape matching.
Yep.
And so, I mean, those are, you know, color and shape matching are things that, you know, you're teaching 18-month-old, 10-year-old kids.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that a 2-year-old can play a game like 1901, but I do think that, you know, our 5-year-old and our
they totally
week,
can.
This week, 8-year-old, could totally get this game, and I think that they would enjoy the vibrant colors and the art style and those kinds of things, because they've dabbled with Ticket to Ride. I don't know that they really kind of grasp it, but they've dabbled with
this. This is less complex than Ticket to Ride.
Less complex than Ticket to Ride is, and I even think that, you know, for some rule adjustment, taking out those bonus street
would make a big difference.
Cards would help with sort of leveling the playing field and removing some of that more complex strategy to make it more appealing to a single digit age child.
Yeah.
So I, you know,
lower elementary.
Yeah, for the purposes of us as the family gamers, New York 1901 is on my list. It's definitely a game that I wanted to try first, but I really think that it could play well in a family with lots of different ages.
Yeah. So let's see, we also played a game called Kingdom Builder.
I loved this game.
I thought it seemed kind of neat and whatever, and the concept was really simple. The strategy was not simple. The strategy was very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't... Kingdom Builder, not really a game for little kids. But the thing is that even though there was a lot of... The reason why the strategy was complicated was because there were a lot of different goals that you were trying to balance all at the same time.
And so I'm actually gonna counter to you and say, it may or may not be for younger kids. It depends on how competitive your kids are or how competitive they're feeling that day. Because I know that our 5-year-old, sometimes he will take a game and just be like, I really want to do this with the game. And we might be like, that's not actually going to help you. And he's like, I don't care. So if you have a kid who's in that kind of mood, Kingdom Builder could still be a fun game for them to play. Because they'd be like, I want to build over here. I want to build over here. As long as it's connected to what you're already building, doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the rules in a restriction perspective are pretty small. There's not a whole lot.
It's very simple.
To the rules, the mechanics of the game, but there are certain things that add, you know, more unique components. Like if you build next to the whatever they call them, the towers or whatever, they give you special abilities.
Yeah.
Or those kinds of things, you know, that adds complexity. And then on top of that is
the various goals
change every game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those add complexity.
So the board changes every game.
Yep.
The goals change every game.
Yep.
Because the board changes, the special abilities you may have access to change every game.
Yep.
So the overall rules are really simple, and easy to learn, but the strategy is going to be wildly different game to game.
Right. So to paint a picture for people who've never heard of this game.
I hadn't until we played it.
So the board is made up of 4 quadrants that I guess you could basically just pick 4 quadrants from the 8 or 12 boards that are in the box. And you put them together and they've all got different terrain types sort of.
Yeah, there's like a canyon and a forest and
desert
a
desert and water and whatever.
Yeah.
And the board itself is I mean it's a rectangular board, but it's all
the spaces are hexes.
Hex spaces. And the way that you play the game is that you have to build these. You have a collection of these little houses, and you have to place these houses on the hexes, what is it? You draw a card. Yeah. And that card
shows you a terrain type.
Shows you a terrain type, and you can build three houses on that terrain type.
Yes.
And then
You must build three houses
on that terrain type. And the only time that you can ever break out of that terrain type is if you've completely filled it up. So say you're in an area.
You still can't break out of that terrain type.
You have to go to a different area.
But the rule is you're on that terrain type, and it has to be connected to a series of buildings, a series of little houses you already have, unless it is impossible to keep building on that kind of terrain type and stay connected, mm-hmm. in which case then you can do the same terrain but in a different place.
Okay. Yeah. And so the point is that it really depends on the goals. The point really depends on what the random goals for your game. So for us, you would get points based on the number of houses you had in the quadrant that had the least number of your houses.
So yeah, which was a little complex to figure out.
So if you had, in the quadrants you had 5-1 and 4-1 and 10-1 and nothing in the fourth one, you get no points.
You get nothing.
For that goal.
Yeah.
There was another one which was for each row of hexes that you had a house in anywhere, you got a point.
Yeah, just one house somewhere on the row. So the first one, your goal was basically to be well balanced between the four different quadrants of the board. The second one, your goal was to be well balanced vertically along the height of the board. And then the
third goal was you get a point for every house, for every special tower to castle.
That was connected. It's sort of a longest
contiguous one is. So yeah, so these goals change every game, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of a pretty free form game, I guess.
Yeah,
it felt like you're not really attacking each other, although there are certain things. It's very Ticket to Ride like.
Yeah, where you can block people off.
You're definitely trying to.
You may do it inadvertently, or you may do it on purpose.
Right, you're definitely trying to advance your own position.
Yeah,
more than you are trying to be antagonistic to someone else.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of it's sort of multiplayer solitaire. What your actions are, they affect other people a little bit, but not a whole lot.
And it's weird that I like this so much when there's so many other multiplayer solitaire games like Dominion that I don't really like all that much. I don't know. And even Dominion, I like it fine when I'm playing. I think
it's because this one's an area control game. You really like area control games.
Yeah, I guess. So what else did we play?
We played Castle Panic with the Wizard's Tower expansion.
And our friends had it all blinged out, so it was
3D super printed
castle pieces and all that stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was definitely neat to do it with the bling, but it was also neat. We have Castle Panic. We haven't played it in a while because although it's simple enough for our kids, we're just kind of tired of the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And the expansions definitely make a difference. Mm-hmm. They make it a lot harder and a lot more interesting.
Right. I will say with Castle Panic, it is a great game to play with kids because it's a cooperative game against the board. And so you can talk through strategy. And even our five-year-old, he's still not really getting some of the strategy. Like, I would have expected that by now, if I said, oh, look, you want to give me the Red Swordsman because next time, I would have expected that by now he would have picked that up a little bit easier. But
you still
got to
walk him through
it. It's still a cooperative game. So. Definitely recommend Castle Panic in all of its various flavors. There's a lot of different ones. There's like a Dead Panic with zombies. There's a Star Trek Panic. So depending on your various preferences, if you like medieval or sci-fi or whatever, there's a lot of different options with that.
But the standard Castle Panic is the one that has all the different expansions that you can add on.
Right.
Which give you different monsters and different abilities and.
I think the Wizard's Tower adds a different deck, which is like spells instead of fighting units, which was pretty interesting. Some of those were pretty OP.
Yeah, it was neat.
And we also played a game that we ended up reviewing and putting on the site. So this is a game that we got in for review called Women in Science.
Yeah.
You touched on sort of a an educational game that we played before with 10 Days in the USA. Women in Science is a game that in some ways, in terms of the educational aspect, really reminded me a lot of World's Fair 1893.
Yeah, it's edutainment. Right. It can be educational, or you can just ignore all of the text on everything, and then it's not an educational game, but it's still fun.
Right. So Women in Science is basically a Rummy-style game where your goal is to build laboratories.
Yes.
So there's a deck of 54 cards, because it includes two jokers.
Yep.
And it is each card is a different famous female scientist.
Yes.
In some way or another. And instead of suits, they have...
They represent, I want to say, five different fields of study.
Fields of science.
Which are then shown on the card with a color background.
Right.
They also... allow for the fact that many of these scientists were sort of interdisciplinary, and so some of them have a two-color background, which also helps you in the game because your goal is to make labs of one discipline.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if somebody's interdisciplinary. It just means you can count them as being either color, either discipline.
So at its core, this is a game that is, again, a color-matching game where you're trying to get four... yellow cards, more or less.
Yeah.
To make a group, and you need to make three groups. Like that's the core functionality of the game. But with the Women in Science sort of overlay to it, each card is a different scientist, and each card has a little, you know, two sentence thing about what that person has done. And sometimes you've heard of them, and sometimes you haven't, which is kind of cool because it's like, oh yeah, I've heard about this person and what they've done, and those kinds of things.
And some of them you may come to recognize over time, but it's also like, you know, there are some interesting ones on there. Like Marie Curie was not in the game, but her daughter was.
Right.
I didn't know her daughter was a scientist too, although it makes sense with both of her parents being. there's an expansion which we were also sent as part of the package for reviewing, which is Women in Space, which obviously has astronauts,
right,
which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It also increased the strategy to the game a little bit because it added another discipline, but it also added more special cards.
Yep. So there's a couple special cards. There's like a clone card, which allows you to basically use a scientist twice.
Yeah. It's a wild card is basically what it is.
Then there's the, what is Discovery, I think, is the name of the card in the expansion that allows you to protect the lab. There's ways that your opponents can break your labs apart in order to get the scientists from the lab. So it was definitely a cute little game. The mechanics were pretty straightforward, very much like a Rummy style.
I didn't mention this in our official review. I found it very interesting that in the instructions, it basically specified that this is an open hand game, that there's no need to hide your cards from your opponents. It would change the strategy slightly if you were hiding your cards, but it wouldn't change it a whole lot.
Right.
Because the main thing that affects what cards you're playing or not playing or discarding is that it's got a very small hand limit. Its hand limit is six cards, and you're trying to make a four card lab at a time. So you're always weighing this balance of, well, if I keep this card, then I have to get rid of this card, and yeah.
So we also played some games that we've talked about before, but it's worth mentioning.
Sushi Go, still one of our kids' favorites.
Love that game. We actually looked into picking up Sushi Go Party fairly recently because we were going to have a ton of people over, but it only goes up to eight, which is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
But Sushi Go is now available on iOS.
Yes.
So you can pick it up. I think it's $4.99 on iOS.
I will look it up and put it in the show notes.
And if I remember correctly, I think Sushi Go Party is either currently is or is going to be a
part of the
in-game
iOS
purchase.
Game.
Yeah. So that will be available as well. We also played a little bit of Build-A-Robot, which is a less annoying version of Cootie, basically.
Yeah. I realized the other day what makes it a less annoying version of Cootie. There's a couple of aspects.
Okay.
One is that it's a spinner, not dice.
Okay.
Which really is much easier for kids to understand. Another one is that even though you still have to roll a certain, well, spin a certain number to really get started on creating your stuff, with Cootie, that's you have to get the head and the body before you can add anything to them. With Build a Robot, you have to spin to the tool spot. And once you have a tool, then you can build your robot pieces.
Right. Which, is contextually a little bit more appropriate.
Yeah.
At least.
But the biggest thing that makes it less annoying is that it's much shorter because you only need one of each number to win.
Right.
You don't need to get six number sixes to get all the legs for the Cootie Bug. So it took me a while playing through it to realize why is it I like this game better? Part of it is that it takes up less space because it's basically a puzzle style, thick cardboard. But that's the other reason, is it's just you're not trying over and over and over again to get the same number.
Yeah, like six legs or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. Has Cootie, by the way, mysteriously...
Cootie mysteriously disappeared a while ago.
Well, that's too bad. Poor bugs.
Too bad. Well, we had a vintage copy, too.
We did, and the box was falling apart. It was bad news. Oh. So, Cootie has met the flesh water in the sky. So, we also played a game called Zooloretto. Now, Zooloretto is a game that was nominated for Best Game of the Year a while ago. I didn't realize quite how old it was. And so, I was really interested in playing it. A lot of people were speaking very highly of it.
It was fine. It seemed a lot like Agricola.
Uh-huh. I think it came out before Agricola did.
Yeah. It, I wouldn't say anything bad about it. It didn't really grab us as a game.
If you want to, play the role of Steve Irwin, I guess, then Zooloretto is the game for you, right? Because you're kind of a zookeeper collecting animals from trucks and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, if you liked Zoo Tycoon growing up, this might be good for you.
Right. So, I don't know that I have a whole lot of things to say about the game because I was so unimpressed with it, I guess.
Honestly, I think part of what really turned me off is that it seemed like there were a lot more artificial shortages of space to put the animals in than we've done with a game like Agricola.
Yeah, I think Agricola, All Creatures Big and Small, they do a really good job of making that game very organic.
Yeah.
And if you know, the big difference between the two games is the worker placement aspect, which doesn't exist in Zooloretto.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which makes Agricola a much better game. But
I did like the concept with Zooloretto that so each person is going around and drawing a tile out of the stack or out of a bag or whatever.
And then they put the tile
on a truck.
Right.
You have as many trucks as you have people.
So the tiles are gender neutral animals or male animals or female animals.
Or money. The little not animals, buildings like attractions.
Right. Yeah, like snacks, yeah, and stuff like that.
And so one of the major pieces of strategy in Zooloretto is should I take one of the trucks that's already out here because it's got exactly what I want or got close to what I want? Or should I draw another card and risk somebody else taking the stuff that's out there that I want?
Sure. Well, I mean, and that's, I guess, kind of...
That's where the major strategy comes in.
Kind of a work placement, kind of. It's like the opposite of worker placement, I guess.
Yeah.
Resource management thing. Because something like that exists in Agricola as well, where you need to decide whether or not you're going to place your worker on a certain thing to get the resources from that place. But... So that's certainly a game to check out. If you like Agricola and you want something that's similar but different,
that'd be a good thing to check out.
Game to check out. If you have kids that are just obsessed with animals and zoos, that would be a game to check out.
Yes. There are more games that we played. We played Walk the Plank, which I have to admit is becoming one of my favorites to play in a mixed age group.
Okay.
Because it is cutthroat yet silly.
Sure.
And I'm sure we've talked about it before. The idea is that, you're a group of incompetent pirates and the pirate captain has basically said, you all need to go. You're all going to walk the plank. And the last two pirates standing,
you're the least incompetent
and I'll keep you on my crew.
Exactly. So,
So you're all pushing each other and shoving and then trying to run back. And no, I don't want to die. Run back to the boat. And it's not a deck programming game, but an action programming game.
Right.
That you pick the three actions you're going to do. Everybody picks their three. And then
they're all revealed.
And then
once.
You go around and reveal one at a time. So, you know, first action. And then second.
I mean, it wouldn't really matter.
Yes, it does, because you're pushing and shoving the other players. And then your actions that you can do depend on where your little guys are.
Right, but I mean, once you put them down, they're set in stone. You can't change them.
Yes.
So whether you reveal them all at once.
Sure, you could reveal them all at once, right, but
they have to take place.
They have to take place in order. So it's fun, it's cute. It requires a very minimal amount of reading. Our 5-year-old will be like, "Mom, what does this card do again?"
Right.
Because the illustrations are cute and descriptive. And it's a blast. We all throw each other overboard into Davy Jones' locker.
Right. The big giant squid thing that's eating us at the end. We actually played another game that had some very similar mechanics to Walk the Plank that we got in for review. And we have a review that will be coming out very soon. The Kickstarter is going to be starting up in less than a month. And
yes.
So our review will come out right before the Kickstarter. And this is a game called Wind Up War.
Yeah.
Wind Up War is adorable.
Yes. Expect to see and hear more from us as we get closer to the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. The tagline is cute cards, cataclysmic combat. And the premise of this game is that basically you are assembling an army of toys.
Yep.
And you're all fighting each other.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun. You have different, not races, you have different types of soldiers.
Different kinds of toys.
Different kinds of toys. And they all have very slightly different abilities.
Oh, they have different classes, yeah.
Great classes. And so much like a game like Walk the Plank, where you say, okay, I want to push the player on my left, or I want to pull the player on my right, you do similar things in this where it's that same kind
of you're programming your actions ahead of time. Yeah.
Actions. Instead of it being a pirate-themed game, it is a game that is themed around
toy army.
Toy armies. And depending on which soldiers you choose to play with, the abilities are slightly
actions.
Different.
Unlike
Walk the Plank, where everything is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Definitely stay tuned for our review for that. It should be coming out pretty soon, middle of October,
yep.
I think. And we are excited for that one. I think that is going to be one that the Family Gamers are going to be kickstarting.
I was going to say that's on the, well, I would say the Christmas list, but probably won't get it by Christmas.
I don't think it will come out for Christmas.
But that's definitely on our definitely wish
on,
list.
On the list. We also did play World Fair 1893. I mentioned it before, but we did play that. And again,
still love it.
I liked the prototype that we played. I love the retail release of that game.
Yeah.
It's an excellent, excellent game. I highly recommend World Fair 1893. Great game to learn as you play about what happened in Chicago in 1893.
Yes. Yeah.
And finally, we played Catan.
We did.
Classic.
Vanilla Catan.
No goofy whatever add-on stuff. We just played Settlers and you won.
I did. It was fantastic. It was the most, I won't say the most fun, but the most entertaining kind of Catan, where it was a race for who gets the last victory point.
Right.
And we're battling it out, and it was literally, it was just because my turn came around sooner that that I managed to get the right stuff together.
So yeah, we have played a lot of games and it's been wonderful.
Yes. Oh, it was great.
So I think that what we'll do is we'll take a little break, and I think that what we're going to do with breaking apart Boston Fig, because we've had so much that we've been doing, is I think this week we'll talk about video games.
Okay.
Some of the video games that we saw, some of the people that we talked to, hopefully some of the people that are going to be coming on the podcast in the next couple of months. Holidays always get tricky, but hopefully we'll get some of those folks on the show. But when we come back, we will talk about what we saw, what we think is coming, and what we're excited for.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back. we're back.
Yes, we are back.
Let's talk about Boston Festival of Indie Games Digital Showcase.
Yes, Boston Festival of Indie Games. Awesome. It's a show that happens every year in the middle of September at MIT. We talked about it before. We love it. It's a great show to bring kids to.
Yes.
Totally, totally awesome.
Although I will say, especially in the digital area, while it is a great show to bring kids to, there's plenty of stuff there that is not appropriate for children.
Right.
The people tend to be pretty good about keeping it
right.
kind of close to the vest. So that if you're, you know, if you're walking around with your kids, you can be like, yeah, we're not interested in looking at that one.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's not, you know, if you think about cons, you think about, you know, massive sculptures and huge pieces of art and, you know, cosplayers and, you know, stuff like that. For the most part,
there's really none of that.
You're not going to see any of that stuff. I mean, these are indie games. These people don't have PR budgets. Like, they don't, marketing budgets don't exist. The one exception to that was the Hasbro game people that were there. I talked to them for a little bit, but they're not the reason why we go to things like Boston Fig. So
yeah, well, in the past, WGBH has been there. They certainly have a marketing budget, but they weren't there this year.
That was weird. I don't know what was going on with that, but let's go through some games that we saw. The first one is kind of a funny little game that was done by Star Penguin Games called Amazing Loot Grind.
Yes. So if your favorite part of adventure games is like, I found the treasure chest. What's in there?
Da, 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 da.
I got a thing.
Right.
This would be an entertaining game for you. It is an iOS game, and you have an adventurer of some sort. You get to pick, and just like in most adventure games, you have all these slots, you know, some headgear and armor and boots and bracelets and whatever else.
And all you do is open chests.
All you do is open chests and decide, is this better than what I have on or not? Do I want, you know, do I want to trade it, swap it? You know, do I want to equip it or do I want to sell it? That's all you do the entire game.
That's it.
But it is worth mentioning that it saves state on your iDevice, mm-hmm. so you can open a couple of chests and be like, okay, this looks cool, and then
I've scratched my itch.
Yeah, and then go away, do something else, and be like, you know what, I feel like opening more chests.
That's exactly
equipping
what
myself.
This is the digital, like, loot back scratcher.
It totally
it's
is.
It's like, you know what, I'm having a rough day. I want to feel like I accomplished something today.
Yeah, you're really not accomplishing anything.
Press the chest button a couple of times.
But, you know, it's certainly, if you know what you're getting into, it's fun.
Well, I mean, there's clear, tangible advancement.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
It means nothing, but it's still fun. I mean, you get experience points, and you get money, and you level up, and it doesn't matter.
Right. It's like this old school 8-bit kind of game. And
it's all 8-bit graphics. Mm-hmm. It's cute.
Right. The next game is a really interesting game. I sat down, and I played with it a little bit. It really pulled me in because it looks exactly like the dungeons from the original Legend of Zelda. It's a game called Bryte, B-R-Y-T-E, and I talked to the developer for a while, and he said the game is not not out yet. It's not really going to be out anytime soon, but he is actively soliciting votes for Steam Greenlight. So if this description sounds interesting to you, I would recommend that you check it out, B-R-Y-T-E.
We will have a link in the show notes to whatever information is available.
Yeah, you can go to booksonlava.com.
Okay.
That's pretty easy. But basically, if you imagine an 8-bit game that looks a lot like the dungeons from the original Legend of Zelda, but it's a puzzle game. So you go panel by panel, and there are puzzles that you're trying to solve.
So that would be more like some of the later Zelda games in terms of style.
I mean...
There were some puzzles in the original
Zelda.
There were
lots of puzzles. Yeah. Sometimes it's as simple as, okay, I need to push these 7 blocks in a certain orientation to figure out how to get through to get to this next thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, okay, I've got to hit these switches to go over there and do that thing and hit that switch to go over here and do, you know, some other thing, and I need to drain the water out so I can walk across, you know, that kind of stuff. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And then our 5-year-old sat down and it just clicked with him instantly.
Yeah, he played it a lot longer than I would have expected.
And he was just walking around, and he would push some stuff, and it wouldn't work. but there's a reset button. So you just go boop, and it resets that room to the way it was originally.
Mm.
No load time, none, no waiting. He's like, oh, nope, that wasn't what I wanted to do. Boop. And then he would just keep going.
Nice.
And, yeah, he could work through that. I wonder if, I talked to the developer, he said the game gets very difficult.
Sure.
And so I wonder if there's going to be some metagame stuff, like a game like Fez. I don't know if you've ever heard of Fez, but, where basically you have to do a bunch of stuff, and then, you know, for example, you're going to have to reset to complete the puzzle. It's actually part of the puzzle.
That would be pretty neat.
You know, those kinds of metagame aspects. And I have a funny feeling that stuff like that's going to come up in this game. But that's my jam. I'm really interested in seeing where this goes. Definitely voting for it on Steam Greenlight. And if that's the kind of thing that, you know, really speaks to you, I think that, you know, as adults with kids who are gamers, this is kind of right up a lot of our alleys.
Adults who are gamers with kids who are gamers.
Yeah. Yes. So I definitely want to, commend this game to you to check out Bryte, Bryte.
All right. We're just going to go down in alphabetical order. One of the games I passed on the show floor was called Dragon Dad. And I was like, is this anything like Octodad from a couple of years ago? And it's not.
That game is hilarious.
That game was funny. But Dragon Dad was not. It was kind of cute. The idea was you have Dragon Dad and Dragon Kid. And one or the other, depending on, I don't know, what setting you were on, has to do a bunch of chores to get somewhere. I don't know. And it's a series of micro games in the same sort of vein as WarioWare. Like, one or two word instruction, gotta do something in the next 3 or 4 seconds.
Right.
And it seemed cute. It was fine. The art style did not appeal to me at all.
Okay, what was it like?
It looked kind of like a Beavis and Butthead sort of thing, except it. Well, okay. I forget the name of the guy who drew that. I mean, he also drew
like Judge.
Sure,
Judge.
He also did King of the Hill and stuff like that. And it was that, but it was these sort of dragon people hybrids. Okay. So
it just didn't work for me.
Like, it was fine. And even though I didn't particularly like it, I am glad to see more micro game stuff come out there.
Our kids really liked WarioWare.
I remember
was shocked because I just didn't expect it, and they just like were eating it up.
They keep going through the like campaign mode where it gets harder and harder and harder, and trying to advance a little bit more to the next place, to the next harder set of minigame micro games.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
I saw a game called The Flame of the Flood, and this is actually a game that I saw in Game Informer magazine, believe it or not.
Wow.
A year ago. Flame of the Flood is a procedurally generated game where you are on a raft floating down a river, and it's basically a survival game. Not Gone Home. I don't remember. There's a few of those kinds of survival games where all you're trying to do is make enough heat.
Don't Starve.
And food. Don't. Thank you. This is why I have it on the show. and it's just like, I love the art style of the game, and like it was kind of like teetering on the edge of creepy a little bit, but it was really just eerie.
Mm.
And you're just trying to stay alive. And I liked it. It was kind of cool.
In the vein of creepy, there was one display that kind of caught my eye because it looked different than all the others in that it didn't look like they were trying to get your attention. I know that sounds odd, but they had basically set up three little curtained off booths, and they just had a red card, a green card, and a green card above the three little booths.
A green card, and a green card?
Yes. It was red in the center and green on the two sides.
Oh, okay.
And I was just like, hey, what's going on over here? There wasn't even a name on it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
That was for a game that's called Heart Read. It is basically a text adventure. You know, move north, move south, you know, pick up the thing. Except you listen to it. It's all audio.
Okay.
So you're still putting in commands with keyboard, but there's no visual input at all. If you go to their website, it says turn off your screen. I thought it was a super interesting concept, but I started trying to play through it. I'm like, no, way too scary for me. Way too, it's okay. Horror themed. Uh-huh. So I was just like, yeah, but it's a really cool idea. But putting me in the dark and telling me, you know, basically close your eyes and listen to this thing and then try to do something. No.
Well, no. I think that, you know, when they're trying to really, you know, charter a new course, you know, they're going to go for things that are a bit more dramatic.
It's compelling.
There's not a lot of room for subtlety until they've made the case that it's a genre that should exist.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. So I thought it was a really neat concept. It's definitely not the right game for me.
Okay.
But it was cool.
Okay. I saw a game that I really, really, really liked, and I don't think I'm one of those like Asian obsessed people, but I do think there's something very calming about the Asian aesthetic in games.
Okay.
I just like it. I played a game on iPad called Inari, Inari. And the thing about this game that was really interesting, it's a side-scrolling platformer, but it borrowed a lot of mechanics from Ori and the Blind Forest. Do you remember Ori and the Blind Forest?
I do remember Ori and the Blind Forest.
So one of the mechanics that it borrowed heavily was the idea that with any projectile in Ori, if you're in the air, you can kind of grab that projectile and use it to launch yourself onto something else. Or do you remember this? I know you've seen me do it. But that's a huge mechanic for navigation in Ori. And again, it's this sort of Asian-inspired side-scrolling puzzle platformer, but they've sort of grafted these touch controls onto the game because it's on an iPad.
Sure.
And so basically if you touch on either side of the character moves, and if you swipe up, they jump. But then there's this whole thing with, you know, you tap on the projectile and pull with another finger, almost like a slingshot kind of thing.
Oh,
and
that's
how that worked. But I really liked it. Unfortunately, I didn't get a ton of time to play it because that was around the time our 2-year-old was melting down.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a game that is on my radar to check out when it comes out. It's not out yet.
Closer to ready.
But I mean, it was beautiful. It had an orchestral, really lovely orchestral score. It had a lot of excellent presentation. And sometimes with the indie games, you see really cool and inventive mechanics, and the presentation is a little. But this was a game that looked, for what they said, pretty polished.
Speaking of mechanics and presentation, I saw a game that they just called Para. And I was like, oh, this is as if somebody took the old Mac game Glider Pro and turned it into a touch-sensitive game, an iOS game. And it was very calming. It's not anywhere near a commercially developed game at all. It's more of just sort of a concept, and it was very neat to play. And you're controlling a little paper glider.
Well, you're not really controlling the glider.
Okay, you're not
controlling wind.
You're controlling the wind around the glider, but right. You can also take the glider and crumple it up into a ball of paper.
Right.
If you need to drop it through a windy area, currents of wind.
They have existing currents that you can kind of float on.
So, and it had the same sort of, you know, goalposts and things that push you along that I remember from Glider Pro. Mm-hmm. But since none of the levels were set up in a particularly challenging, puzzly kind of way, it was just sort of a peaceful, you know, oh, I glide through here and I go over here. But it was super neat, and it made me, pine away for Glider Pro, which is now long, long gone.
Yeah, I had a conversation with one of the guys who works on this game, and it looks like the mechanics of the game are pretty well polished, but they really haven't decided what they want the end game presentation to be like.
Level design,
and what is the goal?
Yeah, is it to do it fast? Is it to just
exactly
be puzzly and reach the goal?
So, sure. I mean, I'd recommended to him to play Leo's Fortune, because Leo's Fortune is a great iOS side-scrolling platformer that has basically three goals for every level. You can accomplish them simultaneously or not. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, with a game
That'd
like,
be a cool idea.
With a game like with Para saying, you know, you have to complete the game and have only accelerated the plane with a swipe 5 times.
Okay. Yep.
You know, or something like that. Or collect every little token thing.
Or do it in a certain amount of time.
You know, so you can have these different sort of things as you move through the game. That was my recommendation to him. But either way, it was a cool game. It was relaxing to sort of just fly around and, oh, it's cool, I'll get back there, swipe away. You know, there's no limited resources. So it was nice. I played a game from a company that we've had some interaction with, a company called Yaya Play.
Oh, you did get to go see Monkey Garbage Truck?
Monkey Garbage Truck.
Awesome. Yep. Tell me about it.
Monkey Garbage Truck is a pretty simple game. You know, a lot of the Yaya Play stuff is fairly simple, where basically it's shape matching.
Okay.
And so, you know, a truck backs up and there's some outlines in the back of the garbage truck and you're a monkey running around and there's all these different shapes on the bottom and you have to tap on the shapes that fit the outlines.
In the garbage truck.
In the garbage truck.
Neat.
And then you fill the garbage truck up, the garbage truck drives away, trash can shakes a little while, vomits out a bunch more things, and a new garbage truck backs up and then you do the same thing over again. So, not a super deep game, but it's a fun kind of thing for really young kid.
Well, the guy who's in charge of Yaya Play, he definitely has his finger on what really young kids like to play.
Right. Yaya Play is the same company who released a game called Dino Trucks, which is basically a game where you control a toy truck
sandbox.
In a sandbox.
You have a sandbox.
And you're digging up various things that are buried in the sandbox.
Yeah, and if you collect the right combination of dinosaur bones, then you can make a dinosaur skeleton. And he walks around. And he'll walk around and you can tap him and he'll roar. And if you have any trucks out there with little workers in them, when he roars, he'll scare the workers and they'll run away and then
come
back.
It's basically a cute game for little boys.
It's a sandbox game and it's adorable and fun.
For little kids, I shouldn't be gender normative.
Yeah, to be fair, when that game first came out, our daughter, I think, was 4 or 5, mm-hmm. and we had to pull her away from the Yaya Play booth because she just loved – with her, it was the exploration aspect of it. What if I dig over here? Oh, I found this. It's the exploration collection aspect of it because – it's well balanced on that. Yaya Play has also done several
card game, board game kind of things,
and we'll probably talk more about that.
I think they won best tabletop game or something like that.
Yes, for this year they won something on the tabletop side.
Especially
their digital games, I can't recommend them enough for kids like 5 and under. They're awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were over in the Pollywog Pond area or something like that. What was going on over there?
So we saw them last year. It looks like they haven't made a whole lot of progress since last year, unfortunately. Pollywog Pond is this concept dreamt up by a guy who used to work as part of Jim Henson's Workshop.
Oh, cool.
So it started its life as a TV show full of Muppety puppet things.
Sure. As a TV show concept, or it was actually on the air?
I think a TV show concept. It may have gotten some airtime locally, but not in the Boston area. So I don't know. Some local station.
Okay.
But then he turned around a couple of years ago and somebody said, hey, you should turn this into an online game for kids. So it's definitely pretty neat. It's pretty compelling for that like 5 and under age group that there's no competition. There's no conflict. You walk around. You collect coins. You make friends. You can read a book. You can watch an episode. It's cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a shame that it hasn't seen much work at all since he was there last year.
Right.
I also saw. I'm super excited in the future to talk about a game I saw that was called Wizdy Diner.
Okay.
So the woman who is putting together these Wizdy games is trying to help kids with awareness of medical issues. So Wizdy Diner is all about allergies, food allergies. It's as far as gameplay, it's an iOS game. It's free. It's your pretty typical diner simulator, restaurant simulator.
Okay.
You know, you tap here, you seat the customer,
like a diner
you take their
kind of
order.
Thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
You take their order, you get the food, you bring it back to them. There, you know, time pressure and all that. But it adds in this mechanic of when your monster diner alien person sits down, they say, you know, I'm allergic to milk, or I'm allergic to eggs, or I'm not allergic to anything. And then you have two choices.
Great, you get a garbage plate.
and then you have two choices presented to you mm-hmm. for what food they should get. So it's not a select from a big menu. It's always just two choices. And so it adds a little layer of complexity, but not too much. And then if for some reason you give them the wrong food, they may just be upset and leave.
They may sue you because it's America.
No. They may just be upset and leave, or they may eat it and then have an allergic reaction with hives and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And you have to, take them to a little medical area and talk about
$600.
Do an EpiPen. And I don't think there's the paying $600 aspect.
Okay. This is the savages of corporate America.
But it was a really neat – I thought it was really neat, and I went home and downloaded it and started playing it. And, you know, it's well done for what it is, mm-hmm. and it's just a great way to kind of insert a little like, hey, this is what allergies look like and what people who have allergies have to deal with all the time.
Right.
Without being a super in-your-face like – having allergies sucks.
We say stinks.
Sorry. Family gamers. So I thought that was really neat. I'm really looking forward to talking to the woman who put that together mm-hmm. and having her on the show.
That would be cool.
Hopefully sometime in the next month or so.
We give away a free copy of a free game. It'll be awesome.
I think it's a free game, but you can pay to like unlock all the content or something like that.
Okay.
One last game that I saw while I was there, not so much for the young kids, but, you know, middle-aged kids, is called Stage Fright. So when I first saw this, I asked the guy, I'm like, oh, so is this kind of like a Piano Hero sort of thing? And he's like, yes, but more. It is a MIDI simulator, and you can either hook up a MIDI keyboard or you can just do it on your computer keyboard.
Cool.
But the better off you're doing and the higher level it is, the more likely it is you're going to have stage fright, which then like will flip the on-screen keyboard or blink the lights on and off or, you know, shake things around.
Sure.
He's not super looking at selling the game. It was just sort of a concept. How about we explore this idea of how stage fright actually affects people and put it into mm-hmm. game form?
Cool.
So that was really neat to watch.
So is he, is he doing some kind of psychological analysis of stage fright and building that into the game? Or is kind of saying, hey, here's some crap that might happen to you if you get afraid of
this. No, this guy was definitely, he's a musician as well as as well as a programmer. So he was trying to incorporate a bunch of different concepts at once.
Cool.
That's pretty much it, although I think that's plenty.
Oh, is that all?
And that's only a fraction of the games that were there. We're just naming off the ones that really made an impression on us one way or another.
We spent a lot more time in the board game section.
Yeah.
Than we did in the digital showcase.
Yeah.
So,
I did want to give a quick mention.
Okay.
Not technically in the digital showcase, but on that same floor.
Okay.
Was a little booth from the People's Republic of Interactive Fiction. I know we've talked about interactive fiction a little bit in the past, not too much. But if you are interested in interactive fiction, Zork or anything thereafter, and you want more uh-huh. or you want to know how to explain that better to people, these guys have handy resources as well as meetups in the Boston area.
Okay.
And what they were giving away was a big postcard with how to play interactive fiction, an entire strategy guide on a single postcard.
Okay. So I'm looking at this right now for the first time. You just started up a game and now you're staring at text and a blinking cursor and you don't know what to do. Don't panic, kids. Crazy Uncle Zarf is here to help you get started. And then it sort of has this Sample description. You are standing in an open field west of a white house with a boarded front door. There is a small mailbox here. And then certain nouns in that phrase are boxed in, and the suggestion is change these to other things and see how you can change what things you're describing to your players so that they can react to them in different ways. And it talks about, you know, instructing players to move about in certain directions, north, northeast, west, whatever. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
You can go to pr-if.org.
Yep. And they have resources both if you want to write interactive fiction, or if you're just like me and you like playing interactive fiction, mm-hmm. where some more games you can play.
Sure. Very cool. Yeah, I saw their booth, but I didn't go over there. The guy looked a little frazzled, so.
I only dashed over there quickly because it was in our last half an hour. We were like, okay, we got to see a few more things, and then we really got to go.
Right.
So. But that was neat.
So that was the digital showcase stuff that made an impression on us at Boston Fig this year. I'm surprised I didn't see Harmonix there.
I heard there were a couple of people around, but
they definitely didn't have any booth presence, yeah. which is a little bit of a bummer, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
So that's going to be it for us this week. Lots and lots of stuff that we have been doing. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can send us an email. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Or you can email me, Anitra, at thefamilygamers.com.
By far the best way to find us is on our website, thefamilygamers.com, or on Facebook.
Facebook.com/familygamersAA.
Our Twitter is very similar. It is twitter.com/familygamersAA. Yep. You can also find us on iTunes. iTunes is the place to go if you would like to subscribe to the podcast, which is something that we would love it if you would do.
Please subscribe and please rate and review us so yeah. other people can find us too.
Yep. It turns out that ratings and reviews are actually kind of super important.
Just a little bit.
Kind of super important. If you have any questions for us, please do not hesitate to let us know. If there's anything you'd like to hear us talk about on the show, again, please do not hesitate to let us know. We're still working on cleaning up the contest mess that we left when we moved, but soon we will have another contest up and running for you to get free stuff, because who doesn't like free stuff,
yes.
to be honest?
Also look forward to a lot of interviews with game makers mm-hmm. from Boston Fig.
Yep, and we got a bunch of stuff in for review because of Boston Fig.
Yes,
too.
We
so,
did.
Keep an eye on the Facebook page or on our website, thefamilygamers.com, and you will see a lot of those things.
Yeah, lots more reviews coming.
Yep.
In the near future.
Awesome. So I think it's going to be it for us this week. Next week, we'll talk about the tabletop stuff that we really liked at Boston Fig this year.
And, there was a lot of it.
Oh, so much. But that's going to be it for us. So until next week,
play games with your kids.